Hey, this is my first episode of Let's Talk. Today I'm going to talk about my journey in this heart transplant world, kidney just transplant in general, the transplant world. Like, it was it's interesting. It's very interesting. You know, I start way back when I was little, growing up in New York City, Jamaica, Queens. My name is Monty Scott. I always played sports. I was always active. I was an active kid growing up in Jamaica, man, on 140th and 161. 140, 161. Big shout out to the 161 crew, originals, you know. Growing up in Jamaica and in the 70s was a lot of fun, man. A lot of fun. We did a lot of stuff other kids didn't really do. Pardon that noise. That's a car next door. But we did a lot of stuff other kids didn't do in my neighborhood. I find, you know, going to college later in my years, and I tell my stories are coming up. A lot of kids didn't have the stories we had or did the things we did coming up, you know. So, you know, later in a couple of episodes of Let's Talk, I'll tell a couple of stories of me growing up in my neighborhood, man, in Jamaica, Queens. A lot of people came up around when I came up. A lot of things started, like hip-hop started. I was alive. I was growing up alive. Yeah, I was growing up in Jamaica at the time hip-hop started, rap started, so that was interesting too. We'll talk about that. You know, I'm gonna have a good time with this podcast, man. I got a lot to say. So, my transplant life, man. My transplant life. My transplant life started, I won't say my transplant life, but me first finding out I needed a heart, going to the hospitals. My mom's used to take me to the clinics, the local clinics all the time, in Queens General all the time to, you know, get checked by the doctors. I really didn't pay that too much mind. Because I was little, but I remember her always having me in those hospitals and going to get checked out. And a little of the conversations that they used to have with my mom's was about, you know, my heart and the rhythm of my heart and how it beat and it had a hole in it and I had a regular heartbeat, and, you know, I really didn't pay it too much mind. But at that time, I could look back and know, like, I was going through. I used to have pains in the left side of my body, you know, going through my arms, radiating through my arms and stuff of that nature. You know, there was one time that I got a second wind. But for the most part, coming all the way up and coming through all the way up until now, I never really caught a second wind, you know. And I understand now why I really didn't catch that second wind that I caught when I was running when I was a kid. It never happened to me again, and I was always trying to do that again. This long distance race, I used to go to the Fresh Air Fund, these camps and coming up in the city, where they used to send inner city kids out to the country to go stay with some white people, a white family, for 2 weeks. So I would do that every summer, the Fresh Air Fund. Shout out to the Fresh Air Fund. I used to go to the Fresh Air Fund every summer for 2 weeks, these camps. And I'd either go to a person's house or I'd go to an actual camp up in the woods, in a cabin and all that, log cabin and all that. It was a lot of fun. I had a ball, man. Whenever I did, I loved getting a duffel bag, you know what I'm saying, and going to Mays and up on Jamaica Avenue, the Ave, we called it, to get, you know, my stuff for camp and, you know, get ready to get on that Greyhound running all the way up to the city. We was always late anyway, so, you know, we run and get to the city, and it's, you know, good thing the buses never left us, but, we get there with a bunch of kids we don't know, you know what I'm saying? And, yo, the Fresh Air Fund stories, I got those too. Those is coming, but let's talk. But let me stay on topic, because I got so much to say, you know what I mean? And I never really did a podcast. I've always been told to do one, and this is like my first, you know, orientation to that. So, looking forward to this. Dang, I forgot where I was at. We go to the Penn Station, and there's a lot of kids there. And at the end of the camp, we used to play the Olympics. Each cabin, you know, do a couple of athletic events against one another. And I was always in the running stuff and the bike ride, you know, I was always in that. So I knew what my strengths were. So I'm like, yeah, I'm gonna go to the running. I ain't nobody fast as me. So I'm gonna definitely do that. I jumped in the long distance running too. So I do the sprint, you know, I kill everybody, ain't nobody really running with me. And that's little, but, you know, I get to the long distance race. And in this long distance race, I caught a second win. A second win to me was, I'd run, you get tired, that normal first win, you get tired, but I ran through that. And then I would get this euphoria. Like, I didn't get tired again. And it was like I started the race all over again. I never felt that again. You know? This happened to me when I was like 6, 7, 8 years old in this long distance race at camp. And I was like, yo, I might be able to do this for a living. Like, that's how crazy it was, because I didn't get tired. You know? I guess my heart was operating correctly or something at that particular time of my life. And I didn't get tired. I was breathing normally. But running real fast. You know what I'm saying? I don't know if y'all ever experienced that. You know, whoever might be listening, if you ever experienced a second wind when your heart was acting, was working correctly. You know, but I did. But I never experienced that again. You know, and I always remembered that feeling. So coming up, junior high school, even elementary school, PS52, shout out to PS52. Shout out to PS231. That's my junior high school. Shout out to Jackson for the first semester 9th grade, because Jackson was crazy. And then I transferred to Springfield Gardens in Springfield in Laurelton, over there by the conduit, for those who know Jamaica, the south side. I never experienced that second one again. And I just remember that. And now I'm at college. I'm in my 20s. I'm jumping past so much stuff in terms of just talking about my transplant, you know, my life towards transplant, that is ridiculous. But each one of these things I'm passing, we're going to talk about it at one point in time, because I'm going to do this podcast stuff. This is cool. I like it. So I'm in college, and at this time, Reggie Lewis had passed away. Len Bias died on the basketball court. Reggie Lewis, Hank Gathers, these guys are dying. Anthony Mason, shout out to Mace, RIP Mace, you know, he's from my hood. You know, they passing away from heart conditions. But I still, at this time, I'm not, you know, that's not me. I just know that now, after getting a heart transplant, a kidney transplant, that was supposed to happen to me, but I wish I would have kept that heart, man. I always said that. That heart that I eventually got all messed up and mangled. I know it looked terrible after. Shout out to my first heart, man. I love that heart, man. That heart meant a lot to me, man, because it helped me. It kept me alive. You know what I mean? It never let me down. You know what I'm saying? Excuse me. I wish I could have kept it in the jar of formaldehyde by my dresser, and every day I wake up and I'd be able to tap it and just to let it know how much I appreciate it, man, because it did a lot for me. I never really had that moment, you know, with these transplant stuff, to where, you know, I sat down with myself and really let, you know, my feelings felt, let myself know how much that meant to me to be able to have a heart transplant and a kidney transplant, you know what I mean? And that road and all that I went through, I was so focused on getting to this point and getting it done that I didn't fall back, you know what I mean, and have that. So this, I'm not gonna do it right now, but you know, so I'm in college. And I was blessed enough to have. But see, I'm missing all of it. I'm just not talking about all the time I had at Rogers High School in Newport, Rhode Island. Where, you know, I kind of montanized this area. And I told my grandmother that. God bless her soul. She's gone. Joyce Williams, she passed. You know, from kidney failure. And she really didn't have to go. She could have stayed around, and it really wasn't her time to leave. She just was tired, and I get it now after going through all the stuff that I've been through with my health. Like, I could see, I understand totally why she, you know, she gave, you know, she threw the towel. I get it. I didn't understand it then, because I, you know, I got so much life. I thought, you know, that I would never throw in the towel, you know. But that's another conversation. So I'm at University of Rhode Island, and this is another time to where I realized that that my heart could have let me down, and we had to run these 40s, 10 40s. Shout out to the University of Rhode Island football team, 1AA football we played, 87-92. We used to have to run these 40s. We had to run 10 40s with, like, I don't know how much time was in between the 40s. We had a little bit of time in between the 40s to rest and run another 40. 40-yard dash is what I'm talking about. And we get timed on each one of them. And you'd have to run 10. So I ran the first couple, like the first three, and then my legs, muscles locked up because my heart wasn't making enough oxygen, you know, for my muscles to relax so I can continue to run. They got fatigued quick. So I didn't get that. I never got the second win. So all this time I'm playing intramural basketball all my life, competing at a high level. But thank God my level was high enough at that particular time to be special. You know, so I know God blessed me with this athletic ability that I would have been on TV or something of that nature, been able to make a good living, you know, and have the basis to take care of my family, of which I always wanted to do. That was a goal of mine. That's a goal of all of us coming out the hood, you know, to take care of our moms and making sure our family is good. That's always been a goal of mine as far as athletics is concerned. And, you know, so I never caught that second win, coming up through sports, you know. And had I caught that, I would have took a couple of attempts off my 40 time, because even with this, the heart that wasn't operating as strong as everybody else's was, I was still running a low 4.5. You know, I could have got that down to a 4.4 without question, you know. And had I been in the 4.4s, I would have went in the league. I could have gotten the league 4.5, but I would have been working extremely hard on every play to play at the level they're playing at, and it would have been real easy for them to do it. But nobody would have knew my struggle. That was what, you know, I was dealing with, and that, you know, theirs would have been easier. But had I had a good heart, man, you know, and my heart was fantastic. Not to say it, a good heart. If I'd have had a quote unquote normal heart, you know, I would have been able to do that and fulfill my dreams of being a professional basketball or football player, you know. So I get to the point to where I'm working, I'm driving tractor trailer. I pick my profession to take care of my family, because I didn't do it to where I could make a living at playing athletics. So I chose to drive tractor trailer. My wife didn't want to leave Rhode Island to go to where the money was, so I had to make the money here. And what I figured out to be able to make that money, because I graduated, got my bachelor's in communication. So what I'm doing is natural reference for me. Talking, running my mouth, sales, marketing, and advertising. That's my background. So you know, with a communications degree, bachelor's in art, of arts. So, you know, I chose to drive tractor trailer. So I got 10, 15 years under my belt now. And I'm coming up the steps. Working with this young Spanish dude. He's not young, but he was younger than me. But he was a hustler, though. He didn't really need my help. You know what I'm saying? They gave me a dude that can knock the whole trail out. 48-footer, packing it with all these plastic bags of recyclable, you know, cans and bottles and beer cans and plastic bottles, soda bottles. You know, packing the truck with that, pallets of it, to the top of the trailer. And we put about 22 pallets on there of all this stuff. Pack it all the way to the back door. He can do that by himself. That's how much of a worker, good worker he was. So here I am trying to help, you know, hang out with him. And I'm driving. And, you know, because I want to do my part. You know what I mean? I'm not going to have him out here busting his butt and I'm not doing nothing, you know. So one day I'm coming up the stairs and it's the middle of the day. I can't get up the steps. I'm like, yo, hold up. I ain't tired. Here go that second wind. I ain't tired. It's only like 10:30, 10 o'clock. Why can't I get up the steps? I'm only 35. I'm in shape. Like, I don't do drugs. You know what I mean? I don't drink. So I'm thinking in my head, like, I'm not going straight to the heart. I'm like, yo, why can't I get up the steps? And then, so that was an instance that happened at work. The first time something happened to me, though, dealing with the heart, where I started taking medication, was I was sleeping. I was in the bed sleeping, and while I was in the bed sleeping, I'm coughing, clear phlegm out your throat, your windpipe. I'm coughing, clearing phlegm out my windpipe, and this one felt as though it wasn't coming from my throat. It felt like it was coming from my windpipe. You know what I mean? So I get up, I go to the bathroom, I spit it out. It's pink. Instantly, my grandmother came to my mind. My grandfather came to my mind because he died of an enlarged heart. I just remember my mother saying, "Daddy got an enlarged heart. Daddy's my grandfather." Charles Simmons. I just remember Daddy having an enlarged heart and him having problems with his heart, and that's where he died. But he lived a long life. Daddy lived to his late 70s. So he eventually died of an enlarged heart, though. So I just remember him going through what he went through his last days, and spitting blood was one of them. So when it happened to me, I was like, oh, snap, Daddy. And I'm not going back to bed. I say, yo, I don't know if I'm going to wake up. I better go to the hospital. So I said to my wife, who I've been with since I was 18. I said, Nick, I said, babe, I got to go to the hospital. Yo, I'm spitting blood. Oh, it's pink. And went to the ER. And my journey for transplant. My journey, towards an actual transplant started. The doctor then said, all right, we're going to start your medication. Your heart's starting to fail. Eventually, you're going to need a heart transplant. But you don't need that now. But that's what it's going to happen. You know, that's what this is leading to. So that was a decent revelation to know that your days are numbered. But I still had an opportunity to live. That's crazy. That's crazy. So I had to take that in, but I didn't have really time to reflect on it like I do now, you know, because I had to keep moving. I had a wife and kids, you know, and a family to take care of. So I really didn't have time to think of me. I just had to prepare. You know what I'm saying? So I started taking the meds. And that medication process, to the time I was in the hospital, was like a 10-year process. I was on medication for like 10 years. Because I could look back on it after the transplant now. I'm still on medication. An extremely large amount of medication too. Meds is going to be another thing we talk about. All right. That's definitely a topic that I definitely like to discuss with y'all. It's huge. See, I'm winded now. This is heart transplant stuff related. Plus, I'm kind of a little out of shape. So it's a combination of stuff. But I'm getting all that in here now. So this happens to me at 35 years old. And this doctor that I had, I'm glad I forgot his name, because I would put him on blast right now if I remembered his name. The worst cardiologist in life. I hope nobody ever gets this cardiologist ever. Dr. His name is in my head, but he's the worst. I forgot his name though. Like, I think it started with a Z or a G. He was a member of this doctor. I got his counterparts that worked with him is in my I have one of his co-workers, his office. The only reason I got his co-workers with me though, I'm working with one of his co-workers, another cardiologist that worked in the office with him. There was like four I forgot my doctors, my card. I'm glad I'm not remembering their name, because this is not a good time to be putting, because what I got to say about them is not them. The guy I got now is good. He was the worst ever. When that happened to me walking up the steps, he was the guy, the bad cardiologist was my cardiologist. And what he told me was, you're fine. You can keep working. And at that particular time, I couldn't get up the steps. So there was no keep working. I had to just, build the medication side of this and focus on getting a heart transplant at this time, because at 45, 2 more years I got my heart transplant, so there was no more working. This guy says, yeah, you can work, you can go figure out something, you can go do this, do that, because I was like, yo, I gotta get disability because I can't move, I need you to help me, you know what I mean, get this disability. He ain't want no parts of that. So I cut him quick and went to the next cardiologist, who's a fantastic cardiologist. And I didn't really have to say anything to him. When I came to him, he says, "Oh, okay, you're at this point of the journey. We're going to up your medication and you ain't going to be able to work no more." You know, this is him telling me that. When he first seen me in sole position I was in. And after I'm telling him where I'm at, he says, okay. His assessment was, all right, you're going to start the medication. we're going to up your medication. We're going to put you on this, that, and the other thing. And you're going to, you know, you need any help to get your disability, blah, blah, blah. So that's when we started that. So I'm going to get, meanwhile, I'm applying for my disability, and this is a shout out to the disability people shouting for the, trying to get your disability, and I can relate to y'all when y'all don't get it. You've been turned down. Don't stop. There's a way of getting your disability, and you can get it. Okay. Don't take their words for it. You worked. You're entitled to that disability and that those monies. There's a way of getting it. And I went the mental route because it was extremely hard mentally. So after being turned down twice physically, I went mentally, and my disability mentally is what got me the permanent disability. Because of the pressure of you having to take care of your family and not being able to do it physically, and the pressure it puts on you mentally, added on to the physical disability, is what gets you there. I got my disability. So now I got my Medicaid. Medicare comes later. The time I get my Medicare kicked in, at the time I got my transplant, I got the additional health insurance from me being proactive and going to those clinics as a kid and being and understanding how social work works and the things that's available to us socially as far as medical and food and cheese and the food stamps and all of that stuff growing up in the city. You know, had to find out where that stuff was in Rhode Island. And at that time, my moms were still alive. You know, and she was able to help me, point me in the right direction, as she always did and always has, you know. Shout out to Deborah Scott, you know. She's the best. That's my mom's. So, you know, so I get my full medical coverage and my disability. You know, and then I'm in the hospital at 45. I'm 45 now. I'm in the hospital. That was a whole load of surgeries. I'm in the hospital. Dr. Vest, she says, she's my cardiologist. The great cardiologists up at Tufts Medical Center in Boston. Okay? Tufts Medical Center in Boston. All right? Best hospital in the world. People come from all over the world to come here. All right? To get transplants. All right? Best hospital. So Dr. Vest comes to my room in the hospital and says, yo, you're not going. No, you're not going home. You're staying here. Pratt 8, one of the departments for everybody that's getting transplants at Tufts. You stay on this floor, Pratt 8, which is supposed, yo, they set forth the miracles that this hospital performs every day. Pratt 8 sets that in motion as far as the heart and kidney transplants that you might get. That process starts on this Pratt 8 floor. I never really stayed on Pratt 8 because my situation was so dire that I never really stayed on Pratt 8. My time at the hospital, I stayed in the ICU. I was on Pratt 8 a little bit, but I was all the way in the ICUs. I'm in the ICU. the ICCU and the ICU of this hospital. So she tells me, all right, you're not going home. So I look at my wife and I'm like, all right, man, this process is starting. It's starting to get, you know, a lot more serious. They always doing these tests up at Tufts. So if it wasn't something that I felt, they was always able to see what was going on by these tests they're making. So they're like, okay, we're getting to prepare you for the LVAD surgery. That's this left ventricle assist device that they was going to put in my body to help the left side of my heart pump blood to the right side of the heart, because it's getting weaker and weaker by the day. So I get set up for this LVAD surgery, and the LVAD surgery takes 11-12 hours. Some people don't make it in that surgery. 2 weeks pass. Mind you, you staying in the hotel in the hospital. You ain't staying on vacation. This ain't no hotel stay. It's not sweet. Doctors running in and out of your room. I mean, they come in there at 6 o'clock in the morning till the middle of the night. All right. So it's nothing sweet. What used to trip me out? Doctors run to your room and be like, "Hey, how you doing? How's it going? You're in the hospital. You're a patient. So, you know, they know how you're doing. And they know what you're doing. You know, so they should figure out another greeting method. Because it ain't, you know what we doing and what I'm doing and what's going on with me and how I'm feeling, you know. I can't say, you know, all right, I'm good or I'm fine, because I'm not. I'm about to get a heart transplant. I didn't know my kidney was going bad, but I needed a kidney transplant also. So I didn't know how to answer that question when they used to come in there and ask me that. So, you know, it ain't nothing sweet. So I'm getting ready for this LVAD surgery. I get the LVAD put in. Now, you, in this process of being a transplant patient, it's excellent to have a caregiver. And I was blessed to have one of the best caregivers in life, my wife. My wife was kind of, I think she was made to be a caregiver. You know, her expertise in life is taking care of others. That's her expertise. You know, being a caregiver is like she's a natural when it comes to that. She's great at it. Other things, not so much. This is my wife, Nicole. You know, she's a sweetheart. But she's crazy too, though. So, you know, we're going to talk about marriages and all that, because I'm married. We got married '98, I think. But we'll talk about that. That'll be another thing we talk about. Let's talk. So, you know, I get the LVAD surgery, and you got to take care of it, man. The maintenance for that, because everybody used to catch infections with this thing. Because this hole, you had an open hole, there's a wire that's attached to the LVAD machine that's attached to the left side of your heart that's pumping the blood in, and there's a wire that connects to the batteries that comes out your body. And that hole, you got to keep clean. She was perfect at that. And we figured out how to keep that clean, because you got to take off the sticky stuff. After you take off each one of those sticky things that tapes around the hole to keep the hole down and keep everything clean, every time you take that off, there's residue from that. You got to clean that residue off. If you don't, it'll get infected. Because that sticky stuff will get in that hole. And once it gets infected, you can't get the infection out. So us knowing that, we knew that you know, that was how everybody was getting infected. We tried to pass that information on, but the nurses inside the hospital was the ones that was really, you know, and nurses are so, nurses, I have a new respect for nurses and understand how very important, vital, and vital that their position is in that hospital. They might be the most important part of the hospital is the nurses. Big, huge shout out to the nurses at Tufts Medical Center in Boston, Massachusetts. Much love to them. Much love to Tufts, but much love to the nurses at Tufts. Totally support them 110%, man. Y'all keep doing what y'all doing, because, you know, without y'all, Tufts would not be able to do what they do. So the nurses, not knowing, because they're so busy, they don't have time to take the sticky stuff off the patches that they use to cover the holes. So that stuff gets in the holes and everybody gets infections. So if they were able to put time in to clean that out, it'd be less infections at Tufts. All right, so that's one surgery. And then after, hold on, let me back up, because I want to tell you about Dr. Lobadiah, one of the best cardiologists you'll ever have. And he unfortunately won't be around for everybody else to have for some more years, because he's getting older, you know what I mean? And but he's the best. Sense of humor, but no. But before that, he knows his job, and he's cocky as hell, but he's funny as hell too, though. So I meet him, right? I meet Dr. Levine, because I wanted to keep everything with my Medtronic. I had a pacemaker in my chest, so I wanted to keep the pacemaker doctors and the transplant doctors the same, because I was... One was South Coast, and one was Lifespan. Wanted to keep everything South Coast, because that's who put my pacemaker in, Medtronic. Shout out to Medtronic. So, you know, I'm getting a sponsor for my podcast, because I deal with so many different companies in my life. So I wanted to keep them, you know, all my doctors the same. So I go to them and they refer me to Dr. Levine. Dr. Levine introduced him. He says, "Oh, so what made you come to me?" He thinking I wanted to come to him because somebody told me how great he was. And I said, "Nah, you know why you tell me how great you was? I came to you because I wanted to keep all my doctors on the same team, like working with this." You know, I was working with Lifespan and South Coast. I want to keep everybody the same. I didn't want to mix that, because it was hard to get my information. That, you know, everything wasn't one. So he was like, "You know, I'm gonna be the last cardiologist you're gonna ever need. You ain't gonna need another cardiologist after me. I'm gonna be able to get you all the machines you need. And when it comes to it, I'll be able to get you all the heart transplant too, because I know people." So, but I wanted to know, you know, what made you come to see me, because I'm so great. I'm like, "Yo, this guy's a trip." But nah, unfortunately, I don't mean to bust your bubble, because I was just wanting to keep all my doctors on the same, you know, on the same team. So he was like, "All right, but hey. But when you do, you don't need it now. But when you do, when it gets to the next stage of this, you're gonna need to be introduced to Tufts." He's the one that introduced me to Tufts and all the doctors there to get my transplant. So when you do need that, you know, just give me a call. Gave me a cell number. Give me a call, and we can start that process. I was like, "Bet." Damn, 2 weeks later, I'm being rushed That's another thing on this transplant journey. You're in and out of the ER. Like, you're in and out of the emergency room. You know? You constantly go in the emergency room because you don't know what's going on with you. And you don't know what this process consists of. And you can pass away from anything. So you always run in the emergency room. And shout out to Newport Hospital in the ER. They're again, I have nothing bad to say about Newport Hospital in Rhode Island. They're great. And they were a hub for me to get to Tufts, you know, and get to whatever specialist I needed to. I would go there and they would send me to the specialist in the ambulance. So shout out to Newport Hospital, man. So, you know, we at, this is, prior to me getting to Tufts and being permanently put in Tufts and staying there is when, I met Dr. Levine. I had to put that story in there because I couldn't forget him, you know, he's the man and he's my man still to this day. And that super juice that he told me about. Was this juice that, yo, you get, it was like a steroid or something. One of the juices was, it started with a D, and the other juice started with an M. Once the one of them didn't work anymore, you was able to go switch to the other one, and they kind of did the same thing. In terms of making your heart work, like getting everything out your heart, it's like sort of, getting all the gas out the gas tank before you have to swap it out. You know, it would made it work so efficiently, but it just didn't last. You know, it didn't last that long. So I would get this, take this malamine. I want to say that. I don't know why that name's coming to my head, but, you know, I would take this juice all the time and it make me feel like my heart was regular. I'm like, yo, why didn't they give me this stuff from the beginning? It just don't last that long, Monty. I'm like, oh, all right. Well, I ain't looking forward to that time that this stuff don't work, but dang. But I feel great. I'm like, yo, maybe I could go. Yeah, nah, that didn't. That wasn't in the plans, guys. So back to after the LVAD surgery. Get the LVAD surgery for my left side of my heart. Alright. And then the right side fails. So I gotta get this bivad surgery. Now with the LVAD, I was able to get out the hospital for a little bit and go back home, and me and my wife would do everything we needed to do at home. IV poles, ports being put in my body for me to take the medicine directly in my vein. And, you know, a port is something that they put in your vein so that you can take the medicine and go directly in your system and it stays open. But it keeps it so it don't get infected and it stays clean and all of that. So you get these ports put in your body all the time too. That was a situation. And it was done by an outside service. Used to come to the hospital and put these ports inside your body and your vein. One of your big veins in your arm goes directly to your heart. And they'd run a tube through your vein all the way through. And all of this stuff that I'm saying to you is so very serious. And there's so many things that can go wrong. Thank God none of this stuff went wrong with me. And that's why I shout out Tufts so much. Because they're doing life-threatening stuff every day and saving people's lives. And they make the crazy look normal. Shout out to Tufts, man. And I get that I'm constantly getting these ports and stuff of that nature put in. So, I get the BIVAD. And that's another 11, 12, 13 hour surgery. All these surgeries, it's crazy long. All life-threatening. all so very serious. And you got to do all the preparations for these surgeries. You don't just go in and have these surgeries. You do preps. Each day is a prep. You get a particular thing done to your body. Why are you in the ICU? So if you was to come to my room in the ICU after I got the LVAD, now I'm stuck in the hospital, I'm getting the BIVAD. You ain't coming in my room, really. Because there's so many machines in my room that you can't come in there. You know, there's no room in my ICU room for but like two people. Other than that, it's all machines around my bed. I got 8 IVs, 4 in one arm, 4 in the other. You know, I don't know how them lines got crossed up while I'm in the bed, but they used to get crossed up. Nurse come in there, "Dag, Monty, how you got all this?" Say, "Yo, I can't even move. I have no idea how these lines get all crossed up." You know what I mean? Because one day while I was in there, this is after the BIVAD surgery, I moved the covers. And for some reason, I never looked at my legs. I have big thighs. You know, I had big thighs playing football. And I was just born with big thighs, though. I looked under the covers and my thighs were gone. I was like, my thighs were sticks. I didn't have a mirror, so I didn't see what I looked like. I was a stick. I was a stick. I lost all my weight. I dropped, I want to say 100 pounds. I was only like 130 pounds. 137, 140 pounds. I'm naturally, at that particular time, I was about 225, 230. You know, 6 feet, 230. So I was big before I went to the hospital. While I was in there and I had the BIVAD surgery and I had this next surgery I'm going to tell you about, the ECMO surgery, I looked at my legs, they were gone. And I saw myself in the mirror, I was all discolored. I'm like, damn, that's me? I don't look nothing like myself. And my wife has to come here every day. My kids come here every day looking at me. And I'm thinking about, I got to put a smile, because I don't want them worrying about me. You know what I'm saying? I want them to know I'm going to be all right. Every time they come in this room, I want them to know I'm going to be fine and I'm going to make it. I'm thinking that in my head, but I don't look like that if you came to my room and saw me. You know? So I kind of took myself out my body during this process when I stayed in the ICU, because I didn't see myself. So I had a picture of myself. It was not the person that everybody saw. That wasn't the picture that I thought I was, you know, and I had to keep that going. That's what I used to get me over all these humps that I had to get over. Because I woke up in one of my surgeries. I think it was my ECMO surgery. I woke up in that surgery. I heard the doctors changing in the operating room. Like the main doctor who I went to sleep. They gave me the stuff and went to sleep. And I heard that doctor leave the room. And the two other doctors, the junior doctors, came in and they finished the surgery. And I heard them say to them, "All right, y'all ready? You know, y'all ready?" And I was up during that process, like conscious. My eyes didn't open. I couldn't move my arms or none of that. I tried to move my finger. I could have swore I moved my finger during this one of the times I woke up, because I woke up twice. And I had to stay calm so I wouldn't panic, you know. But I woke up during one of the surgeries. And I told the doctors that because they used to always say to me, yo, Monty wants more medicine. He wants this. He's and all that nonsense. But I wasn't the person that they had in their book. You know what I'm saying? Like, I wasn't in their book. So you couldn't read about me and be like, all right, him, he's... No, I was different. And I was trying to get that a point across to them. They trying to give me the medicine they give everybody else, and that didn't work for me. You know what I mean? So, you know, shout out to the doctors at Tufts and everybody. You know, they started listening to me, you know. After I told them I was up and what they would have... We had a big meeting after I woke up and told them that. You know, everybody came to my room, the head of the department, the head of the ICU, and everything, you know. Listen to Monty, he knows what he's talking about. So the perspective changed, but I had to get them there. And once we had this talk, you know, it was good for a short period of time. So I get to the point to where the ECMO surgery. Now this doctor that went back to Mass General, he stayed there. He came to my room prior to the surgery. The day before the surgery I was having for the ECMO, he says, "Yo, you're gonna have this crazy surgery, and you can make it." I never thought I wasn't gonna make it, but he was like, "You can make it. You know, you're gonna be all right." I never seen it that way. You know, I didn't think it was gonna be a tough thing to do or anything like that. I had a lot of energy, a lot of life. You know, I didn't feel depleted. You know, I was, you know, it wasn't something I was preparing for. I just, you know, was ready to get to the other side of it. So he comes to my room and says that. And, you know, this is the first time that it hit me that this was going to be a big deal. But I still didn't look at it like that. I'm going to be fine, man. I'll get to the other side of it. Let's just do it. Stop gassing this situation up. Boom, had an ECMO surgery. Wake up. 3 hoses coming out my body. Huge hoses, like water hoses that you water your water with, coming out my body. And all of them were red. Now, for a couple of days, I really didn't pay the hoses any mind because I ain't moving in this bed. I'm attached to these hoses, and that hoses go to this machine, which is the ECMO machine, and my blood comes back. So I'm not moving. It's stapled to my body, and I didn't move any of the covers to look at it going in my body. So, you know, there's staples that this thing is stapled to my body. And one day, I realized that, because I always thought those hoses were painted. You know, it was painted. It wasn't my blood. You know, I thought those was painted things that was going to... I didn't even realize it was going to my body until I looked at it and saw the staples. You know, I eventually looked at this stuff and realized what was going on. But initially, I didn't. And everybody, every time that thing, I would move, this thing would beep. And people come running in the room. It's because the ECMO machine was a life. I was on life support. And that machine was what was keeping me alive. And it wasn't nothing happening to anything rupture on that. It's immediate surgery. So they was on that. You know. And now at the time I'm getting ECMO surgery, I'm waiting for the phone call from the head of the department to call me and say, all right, we got a heart for you. I didn't know that process was going on, because I was just going through the motions of this. I wasn't really stuck on each level, what was going on, what surgery was happening. I was just doing it. I was like in a routine. It was like football to me. And that's how I kept it. You know, I just knew I wasn't going to get tackled. I was going to score that touchdown. And the touchdown was the heart transplant. I knew I was getting to that point and coming out of that. So all of this stuff was like somebody trying to tackle me.